Member-supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Well, we have four. Good morning, Laguna. This is Laguna Roundtable with your host, Righty Jim, and
Dr. Ari Grayson.
All right. Good morning, all. You're here on a cloudy Sunday morning with about 73 degrees, going up to a high of probably 78 or 79 today. I believe, Dr. Ari, you were complaining about the humidity here earlier.
Not complaining. It's just a little bit unusual for Laguna Beach. It's still beautiful, overcast, and
now,
cool.
Why would a beach community be odd to have humidity?
It's not really, but, you know, our marine layer doesn't seem to clear out nearly as much as our surrounding the surrounding communities here, Newport Beach, Dana Point. We get to hang on to our clouds through much of the day, so it's absolutely wonderful. Come out, enjoy the beautiful smells of the ocean, beautiful downtown Laguna Beach, and enjoy the fact that you don't have to bake like a lobster in the sun.
Yes, but please do it after 9 o'clock so that I don't have to get in the traffic while I'm leaving town.
Please, right. Please, everybody, do whatever you can to facilitate Jim's leaving town.
Yeah, thank you. You need my wisdom in this city. You need my education. You need me on the walls. Oh, no, never mind. Sorry. All right. We are here, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5 Radio here in Laguna Beach, Laguna's only FM. And we'll be talking about a number of different subjects here for all of your news for the week that was. We'll be talking about Donald Trump shaking up the White House staff. We'll be talking about a real intrigue story of international finance fraud, access to classified materials, and it doesn't involve Republicans. So that in itself is an interesting story. Who would have guessed? Yes. And we'll also be talking about the failure of the Republicans to pass health care reform. Will it come back? Will it die? I don't know. What will it do? What will happen to John McCain?
My guess is it is going to die because death does seem to be the theme of Trump care.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Wow. Not much hyperbole today, do we?
No, not at all.
Yeah, a lot of hyperbole. All right. I'll also talk about some local issues, and we'll end it up with a little chat on the differences between health care and health insurance. Got to kind of lay out the playing field here and break it down for you because there's lots of hyperbole from our friends on the left about the difference between health care and health insurance. So, Dr. Ari, let's kick it off with Donald Trump shaking up his White House staff. On Friday, there were a number of changes made to the White House staff. Chief of Staff Reince Priebus was found dead near... No, I'm just kidding. Let go unceremoniously. Evidently, he resigned Thursday night after Anthony Scaramucci tried to strangle him. Oh, no, sorry. That may or may not be true. But he is gone. Scaramucci 1, Reince 0. And the new chief of staff, though, is former head of Homeland Security, former Marine General John Kelly. Now, Mr. Kelly is a Marine General who takes no flack, suffers no fools, and is a man of rules, regulation, and decor.
Wait a minute. I'm having a hard time getting my head around this, Jim. You said he suffers no fools, and yet he agreed
Careful.
To be the chief of he agreed to be the chief of staff for Donald Trump.
President Donald Trump. Yes, that would be correct.
Okay.
President Donald Trump.
So I'm having a hard time reconciling.
I'm
this
sure as a Democrat,
no
you
fools.
Are having a hard time accepting. You know what? Why don't you go watch some CNN fake news? Maybe they'll explain it to you as somehow a communist plot, and that he's actually being paid by the Russians or some sort of crazy insanity thing. Maybe they talk more about how Scaramucci was being paid by the Russians. Oh, wait, no, people got fired at CNN for that fake news. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. But what do you think, though, of bringing in somebody who's who's a real disciplined guy to finally kind of organize the White House staff, get them in line? Now, Scaramucci had been reporting directly to Trump. My guess is that's not going to last. I think because generally all of those positions are supposed to report to the chief of staff. As I explained it the other day, the president is the CEO. The chief of staff is the COO. He operates the White House. He makes the White House run. He gets all of the things done. He manages everything and determines who gets to see the president. Also advises and counsels the president on matters of just about every sort of decision the president will make. So he is a very important person, but he's a chief operating officer. He makes sure the trains run on time, shall we say. And General Kelly, hopefully, as a person who has run many things in the military previously and Homeland Security, will be able to do this and kind of clean up a lot of the mess and rancor and leaks and all of that stuff that's been going on in the White House. Dr. Ari, what's your take on putting somebody who's a stern disciplinarian in charge to maybe kind of clean up some of this looseness that's kind of been running around the Trump White House?
You know, it's a funny thing, but when you say looseness, though,
why are you smiling when you say this?
I'm trying to think of a way of phrasing this that I can actually get it onto the air. We do have the disclaimer at the beginning of the show that the views.
But it still doesn't mean we're allowed to swear.
No. But when you say looseness in association with the Trump administration, the first thing that comes to my mind is this is an administration that's flowing like loose stools. You know, idea that somehow John Kelly is going to bring discipline to the administration. The problem is not with all of those who are surrounding Donald Trump. The problem is Donald Trump. You know, this guy by himself is a loose stool. He gives out information that he shouldn't be giving out to the Russians. I understand that when the president can unclassify or declassify information at his whim, he doesn't have to announce it. He can just go ahead and do it. He did this several weeks ago when he walked into a meeting with the Russian ambassador, I believe it was, and began immediately talking about intelligence that had been collected on ISIS. It was very evident that this came from...
I thought he began talking about telling how happy he was he'd gotten rid of the James Comey.
That was another thing that he also did, but that's...
Probably not classified, though.
That was another topic. No, this was on information on that Israel had provided to the United States regarding ISIS and some of the activities that they were engaging in. It was a very dangerous thing because it potentially exposed an intelligence officer from Israel's intelligence forces, a person who was obviously somehow embedded with ISIS leadership. So it was a very dangerous thing to do there. So the biggest problem that we have is not with the people in the administration around Donald Trump. It all comes back to Donald Trump himself. And if Donald Trump can't be disciplined, then it really doesn't matter. The bigger concern for me, though, is actually why does Donald Trump seem to have this complete adoration for military personnel that his national security advisor he wanted to have as Flynn? He's got as his chief of staff John Kelly. He keeps going to the military, somehow thinking that they're loyal, they're disciplined, and they will bring the kind of order, you know, the strict military discipline and order to his administration that it's so sorely
lacking. Very simple answer.
Okay.
You do not know. You obviously, while you sit here and regale as far as the failures of Trump and the insults of Trump every week, where did Trump go to school?
Oh, he went to a private boarding school. His father
knew
that
his
son needed. Yeah, he felt that his son needed some discipline.
Yes.
And he sent him to a military academy.
And that's what gave him the discipline, and that's why he probably figures that's a good thing for everybody.
Well, he ought to.
He probably looks up to those people that basically straighten him out.
He should also understand that every problem is not a military discipline solution. That humans are on a spectrum. There's a whole range.
I don't think
of
they're going to be having
not everybody
court
can
martials.
Be treated well. Not everybody can be treated the same. And certainly, when you are talking about your chief of staff, you need to have somebody who is disciplined. But it doesn't have to be somebody who comes in this with a military mindset. The problem when you bring everybody in who is surrounding you with that military mindset is it goes back to the old adage that when your only tool is a hammer, you see every problem as a nail. So a military mindset is different from a civilian mindset, and there is a reason why we have that separation here in the United States. We don't have military governments. We have civilian governments, and this is something that Donald Trump needs to learn, and God willing, someday we'll understand.
I don't think he's going to be having – I don't think he's going to have landing operations practicing on the White House lawns. I wouldn't be that concerned, nor do I think that his solution to a problem is going to be to bomb somebody. So I wouldn't really be that concerned. I think it's a good thing. I think they need someone to kind of lay down the law in the White House, because Trump hasn't been able to do it so far, and Rance Priebus, unfortunately, wasn't given the tools and the opportunity to do it. I mean, there's lots of open positions they still need to fill. They have not been...
The State Department would be one. I mean, why in his budget proposal was Donald Trump suggesting such a tremendous cut from our State Department? I believe it was somewhere around 30%, if I'm not mistaken, and don't hold me up to that number, but I believe it was a cut of somewhere around 30%. Why are we looking at cutting the State Department but increasing military spending by $54 billion, not trillion, I started to say, but $54 billion a year? Why are we not looking at diplomacy around the world, building our relationships first? Why are we looking at putting in military personnel and increasing the military budget as the first means of approach?
If you don't think that someone who's gotten to be a four-star general is not a diplomat, and someone who knows how to deal with bureaucrats, then you clearly don't understand what it takes to go beyond just simply being a one-star general. They are basically diplomats, because at that point, all they are dealing with is Congress and bureaucrats when you get to that point, because you've got tons and tons of civilian contractors you're dealing with. You're dealing with lots of civilians in the Pentagon at that level, and you're also going to be exposed to Congress people and people in the government at that level. So those are positions that are gotten not simply because they know how to bomb an ISIS target, or have the best, or they're the best at basically doing a beach landing off of Lebanon or something. These are people that are diplomats and are very experienced. They deal with foreign leaders. They deal with their cohorts in other governments as far as defense officials. So they're very much exposed to diplomacy and bureaucracy. So it's not like they're just basically, it's not like he came off the beach yesterday from doing a landing operation. So. Yeah.
There are certainly, and I think you're correct in this, there are certainly...
I usually am.
Okay.
But I'm humble, too, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell where part of that ends and begins.
Am I more correct or am I more humble? I don't know. You choose. Well, we'll go to Roundtable KX 93.5.
It's only an hour.
Go ahead, sorry.
It's only an hour show, Jim.
Sorry.
No, the reality is that as a military leader, yes, there are leadership, there are management skills that are involved. But there's no reason why that has to only come from a military background. We need to look at people who have more skills in diplomacy and in de-escalation of crises, not just leadership and crisis management. And we need to do a better job of that and not have somebody who is constantly in the president's ear, which is giving him, obviously there's a bias towards a military solution. And that should be a last option, not a first.
Well, again, I don't think anyone's going to be bombing anybody for a difference of opinion in the White House. That's probably not a problem. I don't quite understand is it just because of the Democrats' disapproval of military in general, or is after 8 years of Barack Obama insulting the military and dissing them, or what would be the proper word, over the last 8 years? The disrespect for the military, let's put it in general.
Yeah, I don't believe there was any disrespect towards the military shown by Barack Obama.
Well, there's not enough time to go into that.
But no, more importantly, I think it bears keeping in mind that the vision of our founding fathers was to have this separation from the military, even going back as far as Dwight Eisenhower, but where the military-industrial complex. So we need to recognize...
Ooh, that's a big 70s word.
We need to recognize, though, this is not just, a democratic love for trying to find peaceful solutions. This is what our country should be striving for. But we should also recognize that you need a diversity of opinions. You need a diversity of backgrounds, and not just military personnel staffing up. I think Trump seems to go to them first and foremost because he expects loyalty and he believes that somehow he's going to get that from his military personnel. But going back to the week's events, I thought one of the most telling things that happened was when President Trump was at the Boy Scout Jamboree in West Virginia. I believe it was on Tuesday. But in any case, he started to cite the Boy Scout credo of trustworthiness, loyalty. And what I found fascinating when he made this statement was he stopped at loyalty and he said, oh, we can't have enough loyalty. And I understand that because here is a man who thrives, whose sole purpose in life seems to be to make sure that everybody around him is loyal to him, first and foremost, not to the United States, not to the Constitution as our founding fathers had envisioned, but loyalty and fealty to him. He skipped right over trustworthiness. And to me, when you're looking at the credo of the Boy Scouts of America, trustworthy, loyalty, honesty. It's not just a matter of loyalty. We need people in government who are trustworthy. We need people in this government who are honest. We're seeing neither of those. This man in the White House, Donald Trump, seems hell-bent on nothing beyond loyalty to him. That is why he gave Jeff Sessions and he berated and belittled his own staff member, Jeff Sessions, his attorney general, who he handpicked to run the Justice Department for this country. He berated him all week long because he did not feel that Jeff Sessions was sufficiently loyal to him, that when he came into office and there was a conflict between the presidency and Russia and an investigation where there was a potential conflict between himself, Jeff Sessions, and Russia and the administration, that Jeff Sessions should have said he wouldn't take the job. Well, that's only a small part of the job of the Justice Department. And if there's a conflict in one particular matter, yes, it was proper to recuse himself. But he kept assaulting in tweet after tweet after tweet Jeff Sessions because he didn't recuse himself from the job. He recused himself from the Russia investigation. And that's what's so devastatingly scary to so many Americans, including Republicans, about Donald Trump and the way he conducts business.
Donald Trump is Donald Trump. All right, we're going to roundtable.
That's not an excuse for incompetency. That's not an excuse for mean-spiritedness. That's not an excuse for this narcissism. And what I came to the conclusion this week, and we've heard a number of people in the medical professions, in mental health professions, well, the psychiatrists, psychologists have not only called Donald Trump out for his narcissism. I think the mistake that they're making is that this man is not just a narcissist. This man is a sadist. This is a sick SOB. This man is a sadist in the way he treats people who are his friends. He's a sick SOB in how he treats his allies. He is a sick SOB in how he treats his colleagues. You saw it when he went through the debate process. Little Marco, you know, low energy Jeb, one person after the other.
Lying Ted. Crooked Hillary.
He has to humiliate. He seems to get his rocks off on humiliating people who he will need, people who should be his allies. This week we saw in the healthcare debate, he did not get the support that he wanted from Alaska Senator Murkowski. And so he went after her as well. So we're seeing this time and time again. His self-admitted propensity that when somebody crosses you, you hit them back not just equally hard, but 10 times harder.
I would like to know this how many of these medical professionals ever voted Republican.
They wouldn't vote for him.
That wasn't the question I asked.
I understand that, but there are a lot of people who are conservative who are in the medical and mental health professions, and they would typically or very frequently vote Republican, but they recognize the psychopathologies that are exhibited on a daily basis by Donald Trump. And yeah, well, they're concerned for this Republican.
Neither of us are of that ilk, nor do we have those skills, nor are we licensed or anywhere near. You are a doctor, but you're a doctor of engineering, correct?
I actually have enough background in psychology that I'm certified to teach psychology.
Okay, but you're
and
not a doctor
I regularly,
of psychology.
No, I'm not a licensed psychologist. That's, you know, that's a board certified, board license requirement. I'm not a licensed psychologist. I do go to most psychology conferences that are certainly in my area, and certainly I'm always in attendance for the California Psychological Association. And I read regularly the psychological journals and so forth. My wife is a licensed psychologist. So, you know, although I am not personally, I am certainly involved with many people in the field, and I am well aware of what the feeling is. I have never seen so much concern. And one of the reasons, even though typically you would not see psychologists and psychiatrists call out somebody publicly, what we're seeing is that the mental health professionals in this country are so concerned that they feel it is their obligation to warn the public, which is within their purview, to warn the public of what they consider to be a threat to public safety. And Donald Trump has demonstrated through his words, through his deeds, that he is a threat to the health and well-being of this country. And as I say, he is not just a narcissist. This man is a sadist. Watch his behaviors. Watch how he treats people. Watch how he belittles them. This man is sadistic.
Okay, that you've done your on the table early, let's get back to what we were talking about. You actually had a nice segue, but you blew it there with the healthcare vote.
Okay.
So healthcare vote this week failed in the Senate. They tried both a full repeal, a skinny repeal, a
Machiavellian?
No, I was going to say a coffee drink.
Oh.
Macchiato. They tried a macchiato.
Okay.
So the skinny, okay, never mind. Okay, trying to do dual humor there, folks, didn't work. We're going to roundtable of KX 935.
But going back to the healthcare bill.
Yes.
And even in
I don't want any psychology analysis.
Even
you can
in
go the, do that with your Democratic friends when you guys sit around and get drunk on Boone's family wine or whatever it is. But
or
healthcare vote.
Or some fine scotch.
Yeah.
Now, the healthcare vote.
Yes.
Even in the best estimates, we're talking about anywhere from 16 to 22 million people would lose their insurance coverage.
They'd lose their insurance because the government would forbid them from buying insurance?
No, basically.
Well, how would they lose it then? They forget where they placed it, lose it?
Okay, basically people are being priced out of insurance completely.
No, actually what that is, and that's what has been said in the CBO report, but that doesn't get reported on CNN, MSNBC.
Please enlighten us.
Or the rest of the MSM, mainstream media that, of course, doesn't have the anti-Trump agenda. They would simply be people who are the young people who are currently buying insurance because they're required by law to do so. That is who would fall off the insurance rolls. People who are no longer being bullied by the government into buying a product that they did not want to buy in the first place. That's the people that would fall off the insurance rolls, okay? That's in the CBO report. Oh, sorry, a majority of those. There may be a person or two, of course, that does fall off for some odd reason, for maybe a pricing reason. The prices probably were going to go down, and the federal deficit was certainly going to go down. We were going to be putting out less money as part of this. But the problem with this that I see is that once you basically come along as Santa Claus and start giving out presents and freebies, you can't take it back. I mean, can you imagine when you were 8 years old, if your parents came along 6 months later, try to take back your, well, okay, Christmas present. Sorry, I apologize. But let's assume you had a Christmas present.
Doesn't and they tried offend to take, my sensibilities.
Okay, but I figured it wouldn't, but I just wanted to be fair.
Thank you.
To take it back. Could you imagine the crying, screaming fit that would have been incurred from any seven-year-old in this country? Well, it's the same thing. If you give people something and they get acclimated to it, you're going to have a heck of a time trying to take it back from them or trying to tell them that they're going to maybe have to pay for this freebie now going forward. So, yes, I understand it's healthcare. It's not a toy train. It's a little different. But it is something that has been given to them for free or for very low cost, and they may actually have to pay the market rate for it going forward. So that's part of the problem why the hue and cry that you are hearing out there for the repeal that they have been trying to flood Republican congressmen and now senators' offices with. Of course, the deciding vote was by one Senator John McCain of Arizona. He was the last of the three. There were three Republicans. The Republicans could afford two no votes. Of course, there are no Democrats that had the courage to step across the aisle and stand up for this. But, hey, what do you expect from the Democrats? They're all lockstep. You have to give them credit for basically keeping them in line for the, you know, talk about somebody who is ruling with an iron fist. It certainly isn't the army generals. It's the Democratic leadership and what would happen what body parts they would cut off if you dare to vote against the party line on something as important as health care for everybody. But
yeah, and, there were, and but, go ahead.
But no, John McCain. John McCain, who in fact ran extensive numbers of advertisements in his last reelection campaign saying, I'm John McCain, send me back to Washington so I can repeal Obamacare. Well, John, what happened? You promised to repeal Obamacare, and then you voted no when you had the opportunity. Is it because of change of heart because of the cancer coverage? You got free medical coverage. You're a VA guy. You know, God bless you for your service, and you get your coverage either through the VA or through the congressional office. So you weren't going to lose your health care. So, John, why do you keep telling the people of Arizona you're going to go to Washington to repeal health care when you go back to Washington you don't repeal Obamacare? Got a couple, got a question with that, and a little disappointed in that. Dr. Ari, go ahead. Give me your take on that from the left.
The problem that we're seeing is that when you're describing this as, you know, well, John McCain came to, you know, Washington or was reelected, basically staking out the position that he was going to repeal Obamacare. That's a concept. That's not a plan.
It's a position.
It's
a position.
It's an idea.
It's a position.
It's not a hashed out plan as to what you do when you remove it. Ensuring that people have access to health care. You know, you can try and phrase that as some sort of government giveaway that these are goodies, that these are treats. But the American people should feel that their life is not imperiled because they have a pre-existing condition.
As I said, it's not a toy train. It's not, you know.
Right. You were very clear on that.
Yes.
Healthcare is significantly more important in people's lives than toys and trinkets and so forth.
Yes.
But the reality is people have gotten used to, and it should be entitled to, the notion that they can get used to being able to access a doctor if they've got an infection, if they have a problem.
And they can walk into any emergency room in the country and they will be treated.
That's
another one of these lies the Democrats put out there. Oh, my gosh, people are going to die from an infection because they can't get health care. Well, no. You walk in and they will care for you.
Okay.
You do not, and they will send you a bill.
And you know what? I'm going to bring in some physicians because it's really silliness to say you should be getting your primary care at an emergency facility.
Not saying that's the way you should do it, but you act like the answer but from you guys is they're going to die. Well, no, they are not going to die. That's hyperbole.
No, actually, people do die. People do die from not receiving health care when an infection spreads throughout their body. Yes.
And did they go into an emergency room? No, they didn't.
Because
they didn't know better.
Because people should be able to treat these things at the very early stages prophylactically. It shouldn't get to the point where you have to go into an emergency room.
Well, yes, they should have been pouring alcohol and they should have been putting Neosporin on it.
But that's the point, Jim, is that we need to treat these things early on. When we talk about things like defunding Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood does breast cancer screening.
They're not covering if I cut my finger going to Planned Parenthood, other than trying to give me a mammogram, other than trying to tell me whether I need an abortion or not, they're probably not going to help me out very much.
Okay, and that's a nice, cute talking point, but that's not the reality.
Well, it's accurate, too.
The reality is that Planned Parenthood does testicular screening, breast cancer screening, ovarian testing. You know, there are a number of services that are provided.
That's wonderful. And Bill Gates can pay for it.
Okay.
Bill Gates can collect private donations and pay for it. Not a problem. God bless him.
And if people are wondering what happened to the sounds, this is just stunning to hear somebody say
a private sector solution to a problem that you want the government.
No, because these are national problems. You know, you hear people say, well, I don't want to pay for someone else's health care or somebody else's insurance. That's what insurance is. We all throw in our money to a pool because we know that getting sick is random. Any one of us can be diagnosed at any time with any number of major pathologies, a cancer. It doesn't matter what it is. These are random. This is part of what it means to be human. And by having a national healthcare system, It helps to keep the cost down for everybody because we're all playing those actuarial tables together. We're not saying that, well, you know, because you're older, you should pay more. Because you're younger, you shouldn't have to have insurance or you should pay less. Everybody pays in.
Because the government knows best. That's
the
Democrats.
It's not a matter of the government knows best, Jim. It's a matter of that we're all in this together and we keep the cost down for everybody when we all join in. This is what it means to be a member of a society.
That's what it means to be a member of a collective.
No, this is what it means to be a member of a society, and this is one of the problems because this is what we're seeing time and time again, that Republicans want to refuse to acknowledge that we're in this together. And it's not just a matter of that. You know what? You can call our military. It's a socialized military because we all pay for that, whether or not I personally have somebody standing guard at my door. I have somebody standing guard for my nation, for defending the freedoms that we all sleep under at night, for the liberties, for the greatness, for the economic strength that we're able to have because we have peace. We are able to have prosperity, and we join in this together. That's what it means to be a member of a free society. And if you want to call that socialism, then God love you for that, because you know what? That's what it means to be a society, socialism. To have some measure of compassion, to have some measure of care, to have some measure of responsibility, to recognize that this is not the purview of businesses. Businesses exist for profit and for the well-being of their stockholders. They are not there for the greater social good in and of themselves.
And that whole
That's why
rant,
we have government.
The whole rant, you know what you didn't mention, which is absolutely quintessential as a Democrat? Freedom. Freedom didn't get thrown in there because freedom's not something that Democrats believe in.
Oh, that is absolute a crock. To say that Democrats, and this is the problem that we're having again and again in our country, to pretend Democrats don't love freedom. I am sick and I am tired of people who, like the Rush Limbaughs of this world, pretending that somehow Democrats don't love this country. That is pure and utter nonsense. So please, please stop that. That does not help this country. That does not bring us together. That does nothing to unify us. And that does nothing to make this country better. All that is contentious garbage.
Looking at a roundtable, KX93.5. Let's take a musical break here and we'll come back after the break. Looking at a roundtable, KX93.5.
One, two!
is Absolute Reality.
I'm going to dedicate all you Albert Strang
to you tonight. All right, we're going to move on to some local issues here in Laguna. Dr. R, you had a couple of things that you had been commenting on before we went on the air this morning. You want to go ahead and bring a couple of those up, or at least one of them up?
Well, actually, there are two major news items here. One, obviously, a little bit less significant than the other. The first is that this week, city officials, including our mayor, Tony Eisman, cut the ribbon this week on a finished beach access improvement at Mountain Road, replacing a 51-year-old set of stairs and adding new fencing and reinforcing the Garden of Peace and Love. There was a plaque that was added honoring the victims of HIV and AIDS, which included a quote from Michelle Martini, I believe it is. She tended the garden for about 20 years, and she passed away in about 2009. But the more significant news item, at least in my opinion, is that the city of Laguna Beach is again trying to find a solution to its parking crunch. But we seem to be stuck in this horrible loop. We get roughly 6 million visitors a year. So a couple of years ago, we had the failed entrance, the
parking structure at the village entrance program.
The parking structure, yes.
That was going to be $54 million in borrowed money, correct, or something like that?
Something like that, $54 million. That was defeated. The city was up in arms over the suggestion to spend that kind of money over a parking garage.
Right. So that was when Elizabeth Pearson was mayor, and I believe they referred to it as the Elizabeth Pearson Memorial Parking Structure.
Well, it probably could be called that if it were ever built, since it took down her career as a politician here in Laguna Beach. But now the city seems to be back at it again. Now they're looking at spending up to $100 million to add 1,400 parking spaces. For some reason, the city seems to think that they're going to build their way out of our traffic problem, but it doesn't really address traffic.
That's like $60,000 per parking spot.
I think it's more than that. I think it's they're looking at it running somewhere around $87,000 per parking space. It's an obscenity. You're talking about 1,400 parking spaces, which is a parking space for roughly one out of every 17 residents here in Laguna Beach. Those parking decks will remain empty through much of the year, but of course we have to pay for them year round. And the real problem is,
but where would they put them? Sorry, but
No. That's a good question. They're looking, of course, at putting some of them in the canyon, so trying to keep some of the traffic out of the heart of the city.
So Act 5, possibly.
Act 5 certainly would be one of them. They're also looking at a couple of areas. I think one that was, I'm trying to think. They were looking at building something over here by Las Brisas, right off of Coast Highway, doing something to expand that parking. The only way they could possibly go would be up, and I can't imagine that that would be considered accessible, acceptable, not accessible. There's obviously a number of problems here, but I think it all comes down to this, and it seems to me that the big problem is that our city council has a business-first mentality. They don't want to do anything that's going to detract from business. Well, Laguna Beach is first and foremost the home to 24,000 people. People have spent a lot of money on their properties, their investment. We don't get to fully enjoy our town as many of us would like to. During the summer festival seasons, we have to adapt to the crowds and to living that, and that's just fine with just about everybody. That's part of living in paradise and having such a wonderful place that so many people want to come and visit. But the reality is that, when we're doing all of these things and it seems to be a business first mentality, what it's telling us is that business is king in Laguna Beach, that it doesn't matter what residents have to endure, the traffic doesn't matter. Let's just try and build more parking decks and destroy the scenery, but do nothing to deal with the real issue of traffic. How do we deal with 6 million people trying to get in and out of our community when we really ought to be looking at something more long-term? How do we move people into our community where they can not have to bring their vehicles into the canyon, down Coast Highway, wherever it might be? Let's keep let's keep the cars away from the city and
people in. Why don't we just stop them at the city boundaries, shake them down for money, and then send them back? I mean, that sounds like it would make you guys happy. To get the money without having to get the cars.
Yeah, you know, we still want to be able to...
That's a joke, folks.
Okay. Yes. We still want to be able to bring people into our community, but we need to come up with a futuristic, a more forward-thinking solution rather than going back to the 1950 paradigms of we got to bring everybody here in their car, and then, of course, we have to find some place to park it. So, you know, we need to be more innovative, perhaps bringing people into Irvine where we have, especially on the weekend, so many businesses with parking garages already
monorail.
Sitting.
Let's build a monorail.
Some form of light rail.
Monorail.
Right. Some sort of monorail, light rail, ultralight rail system. But look at these kinds of solutions.
Look at Disney to build it.
Well, if we're going to drop $100 million, let's start looking at...
High-speed rail? No, monorail.
You know, let's use existing parking structures and bring people into our community using innovative and green technologies rather than trying to build structures in our treasured canyon or within our treasured community where views are going to be disrupted and life is suffering as a result. So they have a lot to do, and my guess is they're going to find a lot of resistance.
This isn't going to fly. No one's going to want to blow $100 million on this. Not going to happen.
Well, why is our city council bringing this up as though this is some profound new revelation?
That's a very good question. Maybe you can get Tony or Bob Whalen to come in here and discuss it with us.
I'd like to get both of them in here. I'd like to see how they can possibly defend this, because as far as I'm concerned, building 1,400 parking spaces and spending $100 million of taxpayer dollars, whether it's all coming from Laguna, whether it's coming from the county, whether it's coming from the state, I don't care where the money is coming from, it's still taxpayers who are footing the bill ultimately. I think this is an indefensible position, and I'd like to hear them come in here and try and defend it.
Well, especially after this went down the tubes in 14 with the Elizabeth Pearson parking garage and the village entrance things. I'm not sure why. I mean, first of all, it's been 3 years, folks. People haven't forgotten that much. Not that many people have changed in Laguna. The people that were against it 3 years ago are still going to be against it today, and I'm not really sure why exactly they would want to do that. Is there something from the was that in the meeting minutes or somewhere we can refer people to go look at to get more information?
I'm probably sure
on the city council website.
It would have to be on the city council website, so you know, please go look at that, learn about that. I think the city council is going to be very surprised and how quickly the community is able to mobilize on this. We have a very strong activist core in this community, and I am very hopeful that this will be beaten back, but our community members need to be aware, they need to be engaged, that this is something that the city is trying to do, and my guess is there will be tremendous resistance and an awful lot of pushback. And then, of course, we have city council races in 2018, and many of us will be out there doing everything at our disposal to replace any city council member who votes for this boondoggle.
Except, of course, Tony, because the Democrats love Tony and will do everything to get her reelected.
You might be surprised. You might be surprised.
Well, my only surprise would be if she doesn't run.
She is up for reelection in 2018. Is that correct?
I believe so.
I believe she did run in 14. So in 18, Tony Eisman is up for reelection. And I would say that there will be a tremendous amount of opposition to her in 2018, whether of course, she decides to run. And she may decide not to. I know that she was questioning her run in 2014. She wasn't sure whether she had enough support. She actually did tremendously well. She came in just short of Kelly Boyd. Boyd has also served our community for a tremendous number of years. But she was
also up for re-election next year.
Yeah, but Tony was actually very tight on the heels of Kelly, and you know, we'll see what happens in 2018. But my guess is you're going to see a lot of people who are in this race to oppose them, and we will certainly find out how much of an issue this is on the mind of Laguna Beach voters.
All right, Laguna Roundtable at KX93.5. By the way, you can reach us, lagunaroundtable@gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter at Righty Jim on the Twitter machines. And let's talk about...
Be careful about tweeting out there. We've seen that this does not always serve presidents and community members well.
I don't know. I think it's what got him elected president was his ability to communicate directly with the people without the mainstream media filtering his message. Maybe many people would say that. So
Donald Trump certainly needs a filter, and what got him elected was Russian news media creating fake news stories.
I wanted to start early on. I forgot when you went way off topic onto the Russia thing, that I should start a pool every Sunday to see how many minutes it takes you to bring up Russia, regardless of what story we're talking about, whether it involves Russia or not. But the Russia fantasy just will not die with the left, and I don't really quite know the left used to love Russia. I mean, that was their heroes when they were the Soviets. They had the great collective, and the left just loved them. And even Ted Kennedy was telling them, you know what, once we get through, you know, a Reagan's first term, we'll be able to do a lot more working with you guys on trying to get rid of Reagan for a second term, which obviously didn't work out well. Google that, by the way, if you get a chance out there, folks. Okay, the Gunnar Roundtable. We're going to talk about, as we said, the health care bill failed to go through. So there is no repeal of Obamacare, whether it be a skinny one or a fat one or anyone at all. Now, whether that comes back or not is a good question. That is something that's been on President Trump's agenda. But one of the things that we need to kind of we're going to help you break down here and give you some information on that will kind of help kind of clarify some of this, because there's lots of stuff that's being talked about, and really, I mean, it's important to people because it affects their ability to act. Well, it does. Okay, it affects their ability to get health insurance. It doesn't affect their ability to get health care, because you can still go out and get health care. The question is whether you're insured or not, because for many people, they require the insurance because of the cost of health care. Now, the Affordable Care Act, while being a disaster, a boondoggle, and a big fat thing that just brings down balloons the federal deficit, does nothing to provide access to health care or does anything to make health care affordable. None, and correspondingly, none of the Republican plans put out there for the repeal, skinny, or whatever, does anything to reduce the cost of health care. Okay? We're talking about the cost of, what does it cost for an MRI? What does it cost for a heart bypass? What does it cost for a stent, putting a stent in somebody? Okay? None of that is addressed. It simply covers, well, gee, how much of a subsidy will you or won't you get to get health insurance? And can we not cover you because you have a pre-existing condition, yada, yada, yada? Everybody sees health insurance as health care, and it is not. It's a very important, and we need to kind of break these two down, and we need to explain the difference between the two, because it's important for the discussion, because the problem is more so the cost of health care and the fact that we do nothing to regulate, or not so much regulate that, but we do nothing to break that health care cost down and to try to find ways to bring a competitive marketplace to where we would drive prices lower than simply just, oh, well, here, we'll just give you health insurance, and if it goes up, well, that's the health insurance company's part to pay for. Dr. Ari, what can we do to reduce the cost of health care rather than simply just discussing health insurance?
I think we need to start by going to Medicare for all, period.
Okay, that's definitely the wrong answer, because it'll do nothing to reduce the – how is that going to reduce the cost of an MRI?
Get rid of having to go through insurance companies. We don't need their markup.
But it's actually not a markup.
Simply what it is.
But it's not a markup. If you go in for an MRI, okay, insurance companies get the best price out there. Three people walk in for an MRI. First person says, hi, I've got, you know, Cadillac Healthcare Insurance. Come on in, you know, come on in, Mr. Smith. Sit right down. We'll get you an MRI. Second guy walks in. Do you have health insurance? No, I don't have health insurance. But I got $600 in cash. Oh, come on in. No problem. $600 in cash is good. By the way, the guy with health insurance, the health insurance company's probably paying about $300 for that MRI. Hi, I'm Mr. Joe, or I'm Mr. Watkins. I need an MRI. Okay, Mr. Watkins, you have insurance. Oh, no, I don't. Okay, well, can you pay us in cash? Well, no, I was going to talk to you guys. Can we do something on terms? Okay, Mr. Watkins, we can do that. That'll be $900. Signed here. Okay? So now we've had three people come in with three MRIs for the same problem, and they've all paid different prices. Insurance company, by the way, got the best price. So the problem is, it doesn't cost them anymore to run the MRI machine for either of the three people. It's all the same procedure. Why do we not have a competitive marketplace where it says, look, here's my posted prices. I charge you this for insurance. I charge you this if you've got cash on hand. And I charge you this if you need payments, okay? Now, you can say there's a little bit of incremental cost if you're going to cover the guy for the payment, okay, rather than because he may not pay and you can't repossess a blah, blah, yada, yada, yada. But it's not triple the price that it is for the insurance company, okay? And it certainly shouldn't be double the price for the guy who's got cash because obviously he just paid for it, right. Okay? So why do we not bring competitive marketplaces? Why not posted prices? Why not every hospital saying, look, for a standard procedure to do a heart bypass, it costs this much money. Here's what the anesthesiologist costs. Here's what the heart and lung machine costs. Here's what the operating team costs. Here's what your post-care will cost. Yes, there's going to be problems. You're going to have complications, yada, yada, yada. Those things happen, and they will be different. They will be extra. Okay, but if you have a basic process with no out of, you know, we don't find anything odd or you don't have a congenital blood defect that requires extra bleeding coverage or something like that, here's the price for it. Along with that, why don't we post out there outcomes? What hospital has the best outcomes? Maybe I don't want to go to that hospital. Maybe I don't know that they've got a higher incidence of infection than other hospitals do. Why are not they required to post these things? In a competitive marketplace, like you recently bought a car. Now, you bought a car that's unique. But if you were going to, but you shopped other car, you shopped other typical types of cars, right? Before you bought yours, you had all the information you needed, right?
And that could be a cost benefit analysis.
It wasn't like you walked in and said, I want to buy a car. They go, okay, fine. Write me a check and then I'll tell you how much it is, right? You knew what the car was going to cost you. You could negotiate on the price of the car, correct?
Correct.
You had a free market of which to basically make the best deal you wished on that car, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So why aren't we applying free market competition to healthcare when it comes to pricing for procedures or for medical coverage or for stents or for whatever it is? Dr. Ari.
I think that would certainly be a good place to start, but I think at the end of the day, we need to go to a single payer system. We need to make sure that everybody in this country is covered. We defray the cost by diffusing it amongst our entire population.
Everybody but that only works if you're charging people for something.
You are being charged for something.
So you're going back to the mandatory government solution again.
Yes.
So basically the 26-year-old who doesn't want health care has now got to buy health care.
Absolutely. And I have no problem with that at all.
I wouldn't question that you do have a problem with it.
No.
The problem is millions of Americans do have a problem with it.
Well, hopefully they'll come around because the reality is...
They will come around.
The reality is, and this is where we need to be grounded, is that I have students who come into my classroom who have had breast cancer, who have had leukemia, who have had any number of pathologies long before they're middle-aged. We're talking about people who have had major medical illnesses at a very young age. I've had young women who have come in who have had double mastectomies before they're 20. So the problem with healthcare is that you're betting, or health insurance is, you're betting against getting sick.
Correct.
The reality, though, is what happens, though, when an 18-year-old gets ovarian cancer, when an 18-year-old gets breast cancer, when an 18-year-old gets leukemia. What then, when they don't have insurance? Who pays for it? How is it paid for?
Generally, either the government or mommy or daddy.
But the whole notion behind insurance is that when you're less in need, you're still contributing a little bit amount. It's like saving money towards retirement. That money is not necessarily, you can have, you pay, here's another example. You pay for homeowners insurance whether or not you've ever had a fire in your home.
But you do it by choice.
Actually,
the government doesn't say you have to buy homeowners insurance.
Okay.
Your insurance, your mortgage company may say that.
Yes.
But you agreed to get the mortgage and you agreed to that.
Yes, but the point is that the insurance works. If you need to have a claim, the money is there for you. You may have a claim after you've lived in your house for only a month and you need to replace,
Well, that's how insurance works. But the government doesn't say you can't buy a house unless you buy insurance.
Well, unless you have the cash to pay for it outright.
But the government doesn't say that.
But the reality is that if we do the same thing for health care, then everybody will be able to have appropriate health care if and when they need it.
Well, people actually, need that to doesn't have really it. That doesn't really work. That doesn't really add up. We've gone over the numbers before. The numbers are somewhere between $24 and $42 trillion over 10 years of what nationalized health care would cost.
Okay,
that comes out to even on the low end. Let's just take the low number. These are numbers from Bernie Sanders. Okay, and different sources. $24 trillion. That's $2.4 trillion a year. Okay, where do we come up with $2.4 trillion a year to pay for nationalized health care?
You know, we'll have to see what our congressional leaders and our Senate can figure out.
So you don't have a solution for it. You just want to do it, but you don't know where the money comes from.
No, that's why.
Which sounds like the California State Democrats who wanted to do that too and couldn't come up with where the money comes from.
Well, that's where we need to sit down across party lines, because believe it or not, Republicans get sick too. Republicans have children that are on the autism spectrum. Republicans have children that have diabetes. We have Republicans who have children who have special needs. And
I'm not sure that really is a Republican or Democratic issue.
Absolutely not. So we need to sit down together and we need to figure out a way to do this so that we have health care for all, just like Germany, just like the United Kingdom, just like Italy, just like France, just like Canada, just like Australia, just like Japan. You go down the list. Every nation in the world that is a major industrialized nation, other than the United States, has found a way to be able to afford health care for their citizens, and yet the United States seemingly can't. That's nonsense. We can do better, and we ought to do better.
If you come out to 30, let's say it is. It's basically But the problem is the money doesn't. The money doesn't add up. There simply isn't a way without basically. You can't suck $3 trillion out of the economy every year and not see the effect that it is going to have on the economy. What you're going to lose in GDP because of that money going to healthcare versus coming out of it for other sources, for other uses, for entrepreneurial things.
But we already spend more money per capita in this country for healthcare than any nation on earth.
That is true. We also spend more on defense, and we've got a very good defense, whether we have,
Well, then why don't we have better health care, and why don't we have universal health care coverage for everyone? Let's try and get a couple of medical people in here and see what they can share with us.
Yes, I'm sure we'll find liberal medical people who will want to discuss the topic. All right, we're going to roundtable. We're out of time, folks. Fulling His Breakfast, Jason Fetty coming up next.